Hello and welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as ever, I'm joined by Jan Bilton.
Hello.
And Terry DeFellin.
Hello.
And we're all in yellow. Of course we are, because it's transfer deadline day. Fully regaled in canary, aren't we, Terry? Look at you. Look at you. Look. You look like Big Bird. What the hell is going on there?
Yeah, I was going for Kate Abdo, but I ended up at Big Bird. What can I say?
What can you say? Well, I mean, I suppose for you, all the excitement's over because those lazy, lazy Germans, they pack up at 5 o'clock, don't they? And that's it for the transfer window. They're home now, aren't they?
I thought that everybody packed up at 5 o'clock. I didn't realise that, is it still going on as we record then in that case here in Blood? Of course it is. You're going to drag that bad boy out right to the last possible second, aren't they?
Yep.
Yeah, no, the Germans have gone home. Yes, it was our transfer day.
Yeah, the Italians are going home at 7, the French go home at 10, and it's just us and the Spanish that are putting more paper back in the fax machines until 11 o'clock tonight. But that's all part of the fun and games, isn't it, Jan? You wouldn't expect our transfer reporters to go home before 11, would you?
Absolutely not. I mean, I'd imagine they'll still be tapping away on their keyboards well into the small hours. Yeah, it's a big thing here. Terry, is it as widely covered in Germany as it is here? Does everyone lose their mind over it on the deadline day?
Nine. I mean, kicker have a ticker. Kicker love a ticker, so they'll have a kicker ticker for it. But yeah, it's not a particularly frantic ticker. And I don't believe there's been too much that's been happening on the kicker ticker for today. I mean, I think the biggest news was Dortmund tried to sign Ryan Cherki from Olympique Lyonnais, who is a very, very, very highly regarded young forward. And Lyon have told Dortmund to sling their hook, which is basically that. So I don't really think Dortmund have made a couple of signings, but nothing particularly eye-catching. So it's not been a particularly massive day. But yeah. I think the feeling is that if over here, winter transfers are fun and exciting, but in Germany, I think they genuinely are seen as being, well, if you're scrabbling around for transfers in winter, you're not doing your transfer policy right. And I think that the whole narrative tends to be framed that way. That's obviously the case in England as well. But it's just that obviously because people find transfer window fun and exciting, they make it fun and exciting.
I guess for me, I think half of it is really just to enliven some fans' interest in football again. If your team's having a crap season, then you think, well, at least do something in January. Please give me something to look forward to from the rest of the campaign, because quite frankly, it's pretty atrocious. So, Terry, what can you tell Tottenham fans about Matthias Tell then?
Matthias Tell is really a number nine striker who has been trying to get shoehorned into the Bayern Munich side with Harry Kane there. He is 19-20 years old. He is a superb footballer, Matthias Tell. And he's just stalled a little bit this season because he just can't get enough game time. He was being played quite effectively last season as an impact striker, kind of like helping out when Harry Kane was being subbed and stuff like that. I think he's a number nine. Bayern, I think, have been trying to play him as a sort of inside forward. I think actually he's probably better off as a number nine, but we shall see. Who knows what Ange will do with him? Probably play him right back, put him into the centre-half position where he thought Mark Gahey might go. But he is an absolute prospect, that boy, and it's good that he is getting out of Bayern Munich, not because it's Bayern, but, you know, there's a big Harry Kane-shaped blockage there, which he's just not going to be able to get through to. I suspect Bayern will want him back. I know Matthias Tell has sort of like said he would like to leave because he doesn't know how long it's going to be before Harry is, you know, moved on. But I would suspect that Bayern, in the best one in the world, would try and keep him. But yeah, he needs game time. So this is a really interesting, dare I say, exciting appointment if the lad can make it work at Tottenham. It's a long way to travel. They're quite different clubs and quite different teams in character, I would suggest. So the culture will be quite different. So there's a lot of ifs going on with Matthias Tell. But if all of those ifs can be ifed, then he's going to be a dangerous player and definitely one to watch with Ange Ball.
Certainly there's a space for him while Dominic Solanke's injured. But if Dominic Solanke comes back in a month's time, what happens then, do we think?
Well, I think, Graham, in all candor, Tell is possibly good enough to challenge Solanke. Mm. I think Tell could walk into a lot of starting 11s. He's really very, very good. And anyone who watches the Bundesliga will know exactly what I'm saying. and I think would probably agree with me. So I think he would have no qualms whatsoever about challenging Solanke. It's just that with Harry Kane having, with Bayern having invested so much of themselves, so much money and so much of themselves as a club into Harry Kane, the guy is undroppable and he doesn't often get injured.
Jan, what's caught your eye in the transfer window so far?
What did surprise me is Gehi being subject to a bid from Spurs, which, well, as far as I was aware, they weren't even interested in him. But there you go. I thought it was Newcastle, who didn't come back or haven't as yet come back for him. I'm going to go for the low-hanging fruit here because Marcus Rashford finally leaving Manchester United, I think, is the plot twist to this particular soap opera that is transfer deadline day. So he was linked with a host of clubs. Some, and I'm not being disparaging to Villa here, who are a giant of a club, but there are, I think it's fair to say, much bigger clubs around, and Rashford was being linked with some of those guys. However, it was quite clear that he needed to leave Manchester United, quite where he was going to end up, given I would imagine he's on a fair chunk of wages, and he needs to be in the spotlight because he wants to be back in the England team. You know, training by himself and not playing at all at Manchester United meant he had to go somewhere. So, yes, he's gone to Villa on loan. Looks quite fetching in the Villa tracksuit, I thought. Good luck to him. I mean, he's a fine player and an amazing individual. We all know what he's done outside of football. But clearly, his relationship with Amarin was completely broken and there's no way back there. So I think he may well have played his last game for United.
Quite interesting about how quickly that relationship turned sour, wasn't it? I wonder how much, whether it is just a clash of personalities between Amarin and Rashford, or whether or not there is certain pressure around the club to look at very highly paid players like Rashford. He is on a ridiculously high wage at the club and obviously has not been performing this season to what you would imagine someone on his wage should be performing to. So I wonder if it is fully Amarin and him not clicking or whether or not it's coming from higher up. But we have no way of knowing. We're not in the know.
He is a homegrown player, isn't he?
Yeah.
So when they sell him, that all works with the sustainability model, isn't it? So all of the money will go straight onto the bottom line. So that's going to help them. But, you know, Manchester United are a team that sadly always looks back instead of looking forward. And maybe they have to look at players like Rashford and go, well, look, we need to move on and reinvent ourselves. And hopefully he can go on and be successful elsewhere. And they can be successful in their own right, but just not too soon because we're still enjoying it, I think, aren't we?
If that's the truth behind it, if that is the reason, or if that's a big part of the reason why he's left, then it does underline just how utterly classless Manchester United would be as a football club.
Mm.
To chuck your player, you know, a homegrown player, a man who loves the club under the bus in that way, for reasons that are actually purely sort of like selfish and financial, is dirty pool of the highest possible order, to the point that I don't believe that that is the case, because I don't believe that Man United would be just so shitty to one of their own in that manner that they would do that. I'm not suggesting Marcus Rashford is right or wrong in this, or Ruben Amorim, but I am suggesting that there's clearly been a disconnect between those two that cannot be reconnected until Amorim is sacked at the end of the season.
Wow, Terry, you think he's going to make it to the end of the season?
Controversial. Controversial, yeah.
You think with Man United managers, even when they haven't really worked out and it's obvious that they weren't going to work out, they still hung around, didn't they? They were still there for long, long periods of time. Solskjaer was around there for ages, wasn't he, before they got rid of him? And the same with Erik ten Hag as well. But now I think under Ratcliffe, I don't think you're going to see those lengthy stays anymore.
Well, Ten Hag is reportedly still under contract at Manchester United, which I understand, as I wrote in my piece for the blog, that is one of the reasons why Ten Hag's name wasn't considered as the replacement coach at Borussia Dortmund, even though he would have been a really good fit. It's because there would have been some kind of buyout required in order to get him onto another payroll. So, I mean, there is a reason for not sacking Amorim. Is that how many fired coaches do you still want on your payroll? Because, you know, he won't go quietly. And he'll have been signed up for a large amount of money and a long-term contract, presumably.
Why do you think they've done that? They've effectively put him on gardening leave then, yeah?
Mm.
Hoping that someone's going to snap him up so that they don't have to pay all of his contract out because he's got a new job.
Mm.
Is this as well, like what Jan was saying about the whole thing of the financial regulations? Is this another thing of saying, well, if we pay them all out in one go, then that's another big hit on our financial fair play, well, profit and sustainability or anchoring, whatever you want to call it now. Yeah,
it could be. I mean, it might well be that that's not the case. But it was Kicker were reporting it, and usually they're pretty up on these kind of things.
Yeah,
Ten Hag was seen sort of like ligging around, watching a lot of Dortmund games recently, and people were putting two and two together until they realised that him and Matthias Sammer are good chums, and he's actually just been hanging with his mate Matthias, who is an advisor for Dortmund and goes to these games. So that was that. Dortmund don't have enough money really to be able to buy anyone out of their contract. But what I don't quite follow is that, unless they're so penny-pinchy United that they want someone to buy Ten Hag out of his contract or partially buy him out, I would have thought that it would be in their interests to let him go to another club, because then presumably your obligations would be over, because presumably Ten Hag would have to relinquish or would have to resign, basically, and resign from his contract, and that would be that. So, but I don't understand how it works, not because I'm stupid on this occasion, but because I don't know the details of it. So I don't know. It's because I don't have the information to hand. So there's a, I think to your point though, I think United have got to be able to come up with break clauses and stuff like that to be able to let coaches go, because they clearly are going to be a firing club for the foreseeable future. I think that maybe one happy day they won't be a firing club and they will be have the confidence to be able to bring coaches in with, say, three-year contracts and then having them in with no break clauses. But really, you know, I think that they probably need to take a more continental approach to hiring their coaches, because they certainly take a continental approach to firing their coaches. Or they should be, anyway.
Well, I hope it works out for Rashford. I mean, he's only, what, a few months at Aston Villa. There's only so many more Champions League games that they're going to lose afterwards left in the season. So maybe Villa's season will improve as well. As they go for Champions League football, obviously he's not going to be involved in that next season. Or is he? Is he going to stay there? What do you think he should do at the end of the loan?
Well, the reports are that Barcelona would like to sign him, which would be amazing. But of course, that's not going to happen until the summertime. And obviously, I'm sure people are aware of just how difficult Barcelona's finances are. They have only X number of levers to pull to be able to make that happen. But the reports are that Rashford is contemplating that, and so yes, there's an option to buy for Villa, but if Barcelona come in and can demonstrate that they can afford him and actually sign him and register him, these are quite big ifs. If you've been following the Dani Olmo saga, you know how difficult it is. But I would imagine that would be a big move for Rashford. I think he would probably like the idea of that. I'm surprised he didn't go abroad. I'm not surprised he didn't go to Dortmund. His wages would have been ridiculous. But I am surprised, because I think Juve wanted him, and I'd have thought that would have been quite a good move for him. But yeah, I mean, Villa, it's close. He doesn't have to move, and he still gets to do the cool things that he does outside of work as well. So that he doesn't have to move to another country, and means he can still put his time into his various other good works that he does. So yeah, I wish him luck as well.
Well, one player we haven't heard yet is Garnacho. I don't think he's gone anywhere as yet. Have you heard anything on that one yet?
No, not at all. No, I knew that there was talk of him going, but I've certainly not seen anything on the yellow ticker today. So
can I just say, listeners, that when Graham was saying, I haven't heard anything about Garnacho, he put his hand up to his headphone, to his ear, in a kind of, listening out to see if there's any reports coming through from the gallery, in a very, very Sky Sports News kind of way, which I thought was super professional. I'm sorry you weren't there to see it, listeners.
Well, you see, you've got to get into the role, Terry. It's the way it works for me, okay?
Absolutely.
Well, apparently a deal to Napoli has fallen through. But that, again, shows what position United are in, aren't they? The fact that they're looking to farm out a player like Garnacho at the moment, one of their most promising younger players. But this is also another thing of what you were saying earlier, Jan, about homegrown players, even though, obviously, Garnacho is not English, but he is counted as a homegrown player.
They've also got, their stadium is falling apart, as we know, and they are going to build a huge new stadium that looks like a jelly bean, as we saw a few weeks ago. But they're also asking the government to pay for the infrastructure, which I think they're going to probably go for from some of the reports that were going around last week. So, I suppose every penny counts, doesn't it, when you're looking for a massive infrastructure project like that. We've seen how it's impacted Spurs, and they didn't need anything to distract them from their madness. So, it could be two basket case clubs with a wonderful stadium each.
Three. You forgot Everton.
Sorry.
No, haven't you heard? Everton are back on the straight and narrow now.
Oh, of course they are.
Yeah, they're back to the 80s best, aren't they?
Boys, like three games, three wins. Okay, the first game technically was a defeat, but he hadn't actually taken the team training. So was it three games, three wins?
Yeah.
For all this talk about Amorim and how much time he needs and how many problems he's got to solve and stuff like that. I mean, that Everton team was a pub team and Moyes has got them free. He's free from three. So, sorry, that doesn't wash.
Sean Dyche won't be showing up in the Premier League anytime soon, will he?
No, I wouldn't have thought so. No.
Everton got to be looking at half an eye on the Conference League space, I suppose, wouldn't you think, yeah, now?
Well, they're on a charge. I don't like the way you asked me that question at all.
Yeah, he's doing a great job, isn't he, Ian?
He's annoyingly doing a great job.
How do you think the Moyes naysayers are thinking right now? You know, how are they feeling?
As naysayer general. This is probably the end of his redemption arc, isn't it? He's gone out, tried to do something special with other clubs, hasn't really hit the heights that he probably hoped to when he left Everton to go to Manchester United, apart from winning the shittest European trophy when he was at West Ham. But other than that, he's done, in fact, that is nothing really, is it? It's not like the Pizza Cup, like what we won. But anyway, he's back and doing well at Everton, where he probably should have stayed the whole time. But, they say you shouldn't go back. So maybe it might seem good at the moment, but maybe he'll be shown up for the absolute charlatan that he is in good time.
Well, his Everton side are now only a point behind his former club, West Ham, so he can overtake them next week. They're only 3 points behind Man United, so they can overtake them as well.
They've got Palace next week, haven't they?
They've got Liverpool coming up next, actually.
Is it their
next game? Because after the FA Cup, because Liverpool, they got through easily in the Champions League, they don't have to play in a playoff. And so I think they're playing them on the 12th of February. So, yeah, that game that was postponed earlier on the season. So finally, Liverpool will have played the same as everyone else. So we can see truly how far ahead they are of everyone else and how the title is theirs already.
Well, beating Bournemouth, that feels, from a narrative point of view, that does feel like a kind of yes. And obviously with City being hammered, which graciously you've not brought up yet, Graham, being hammered by Arsenal and then tricky on fire Bournemouth being put to the sword by Liverpool, you know, it feels as though this is the weekend where we said it's not Liverpool's title, but it's Liverpool's title to lose.
Mm. Yeah, it's an amazing season when City clearly having a real bin fire of a season, and yet they're still in the Champions League places right now and were absolutely hammered. Well, do you know what Arsenal's XG was yesterday?
I could find out, but why don't you tell me?
I can tell you off the top of my head, actually.
Cool.
One.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, from the tone of your voice, I'm not surprised, because I got the impression, otherwise you wouldn't have...
No.
Do you know what their XG was yesterday? Which I would have thought, was it 5-8? You know, but no.
And I'm reliably informed that that is a Premier League record for a team scoring 5 goals. And they broke Arsenal's record for that as well in a game they played against Fulham a few seasons back. Yeah, it was a great match. Well, for me anyway. Wasn't so great for Erling Haaland. But hey, he stayed humble, didn't he? As 60,000 Arsenal fans kept reminding him. I'm sure it was a good day all round, actually, because Arsenal women beat City as well. They put 4 past them up in Manchester in a remarkably similar game. Both games started with early Arsenal goals and lots of chaos ensued as well. So, yeah, all round, a good day for me anyway. Actually, a good weekend for me, actually, because we were all at the Leaf on Saturday, weren't we? In a big 5th round FA Vars match. And Leaf won, didn't they, Ian?
They certainly did, Graham. They certainly did. So we are now potentially 3 games. So there's a quarterfinal and 2-leg semi-final.
Yes.
And then potentially there. So it was, it was fantastic. White Leaf beat Egham, who were going into the game, as I understand it, favourites to win. But White Leaf beat them 1-0. Egham were a great side. We play a lot of good sides at the moment. We have played a lot of good sides at the moment. Egan were very good, but I think a shout out really should go to our goalkeeper, who is 17 years old.
Yes, George Hill. Remember the name.
And he pulled off a triple save,
yeah,
which was unbelievable. And on their social channels as well, he rightly got the plaudits there. So well done to him, but well done to Kelly and the entire team. There were 770-odd spectators there, and there's a real buzz about the place. There really is. So it's great. I'm really enjoying it. So bring on Bourne Town, who are playing next. And I've no idea where Bourne Town are, Graham, but I'm sure you do.
The Lincolnshire. Another home tie. We've had home ties in every round. So we've been really lucky with that. But yeah, Bourne Town at the beginning of March. Yeah, 1st of March, 4 weeks' time. I won't get any sleep. How about you, Terry?
Yeah, really excited about that. That was a tremendous performance by the Leaf. And hard to believe that, because the previous White Leaf went under, this is a club that's 4-5 years old.
Yeah.
Started outside of the pyramid. Had to play in one of those leagues that isn't an official FA league in order to get into an official FA league. And is now at a point where we're in the promotion hunt for our current league, the Combined Counties, and through to the quarterfinal of the FA Vars. And that is an amazing achievement. Yes, they've been fortunate in terms of the draw. To be drawn at home is great. But the boost that it's giving to the club is fantastic. And yeah, to see 700-odd. The last round, we had a really high, not as many, but still quite a lot. But a lot of that was down to the fact that it was a really, really frozen day.
Yeah.
And a lot of games in the South London area were called off because of frozen pitches. So we had a lot of non-league fans coming to Whiteleaf because they've got a 3G pitch to watch the game. So there was a bit of that as well. But this, there was none of that with this. This was all, you know, like obviously Egan brought their lot with them, but it was mostly Whiteleaf, mostly locals. It was tremendous to see. And yeah, I mean, the way things are going, I mean, it would be amazing to think that we could make it to Wembley. And we can genuinely, I think when you get to the quarterfinals, you can start to dream of this happening. And the only slight downside is that it might affect our promotion push. But I don't know. I will take a Wembley final over promotion personally. I mean, I'm not the owner of the club. But I would take Wembley over promotion if I had to choose.
Yeah, me too as well. I think I don't mind playing in the Combined Counties, and especially when we win pretty much every week. So I think another season there would be fine with me. And yeah, going to Wembley would be fantastic. But plenty more football to be played. As Ian said, we got the quarterfinal at home. Then we got a two-legged semi-final. And then, dare to dream. Yeah, so the Vars is full of very, very wholesome, real football. A million miles away from the extravaganza of football that we had last week, the last round of fixtures in the Champions League and the Europa League. Terry, have you suitably recovered from the football explosions that happened on those two nights?
I watched the Dortmund game pretty much uninterrupted. I put that on, so I didn't go for the full goal explosion. I saved that for Thursday when I watched the Europa League goals show on TNT, and it was just like a cavalcade. It was an utter cavalcade. It was tremendous. But with Dortmund, I had a little bit more skin in the competition that I wasn't altogether. They were not in a position, unlike Arsenal, to rest players. They needed, well, they kind of needed the points. So I watched them beat Shakhtar Donetsk. But yeah, that was very exciting and a lot of to-ing and fro-ing. I mean, certainly if the Europa League is anything to go by, there was a lot of back and forth. The old Blitz table, moving up and down on a second-by-second basis at times. It was fantastic, and it was also fun to watch journalists. There was one journalist on Blue Sky, broadcaster on Blue Sky, who's saying, I'm trying to commentate on X game, but there's so much else going on that I'm telling people about that I can't focus on the actual game that I'm supposed to be commentating on. And the guys in the studio of TNT were doing a great job. That's not been a particularly successful show this season, sadly, but they really pulled it out of the bag for this one. They were having a lot of fun following the game, following the goals, and some great stories. And, you know, you'd have to say, Graham, that in terms of the climax of this particular group, I'd say, you know, that was good entertainment. And if that was the goal, then I'd say it was, you know, goal achieved.
Yeah, I did what you did, because I watched the Arsenal game. And although Arsenal were pretty much assured of being in the top eight, I just thought I'd rather watch this. I also had the Arsenal women game on as well because they were playing their FA Cup game against Bristol City on the same night. So I was double screening on that. I had the Blitz table open on my phone, so I was triple screening really. But I thought the way that it unfolded was fantastic. I know that I was looking at Blue Sky as well and looking at a few journalists who were going, it's too much. It's too much football. I can't understand. There are goals coming in. The context of it all is just a bit too much. And, well, you know me, I love a bit of chaos. And I thought, this just adds to it. There's no one being all cool about this. This is all the football is just being thrown at us right now. And for me, that was a good thing. And I know that most people look at the table that, well, yeah, but almost everyone got through, didn't they? And there wasn't really any big casualties. A lot of people were using last year's Champions League as an example of when there were big casualties, like when United went out, Newcastle went out, and Sevilla went out. They all went out, they finished bottom of their group. But that's because those clubs were rubbish last season. They were absolutely terrible last season. And although we've had teams that are bad this season, there haven't been teams that have been that bad. Yeah, City have been pretty poor. They'd still only lost 3 out of their 8 games. I think it would have been fun to see one of City or PSG fail to qualify, but because that was never really going to be on the cards. It was interesting to see those final results coming in just to see who was going to get there. Sporting were almost out. They got a late equaliser, which, considering how well they started this group stage, you wouldn't have thought they would have been in this position at all. And largely, the teams that went out were ones that have been pretty awful all the way through. Did you see enough to think that they should stick with this? Or do you think they're going to tweak things? I think because there wasn't any big casualties, I don't think they will tweak it. I think they'll have another season of this to see how it goes.
No, I think that there was sufficient peril because of, yeah, with Sporting's sort of like demise and obviously City's problems that they've had, which, you know, again, granted, doesn't necessarily reflect their Champions League form because, yeah, as you say, they've not been that terrible. But I feel that if you were a UEFA exec, you'd look at the teams that didn't qualify. And I think the only team that you would probably think wish had qualified might have been Leipzig.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they are a senior club in the Bundesliga and you might have wanted them. But they don't have a particularly large following. They don't have many fans. I don't think they attract a huge audiences. So I don't think it's the end of days from a commercial point of view, if you want to be really cold and cynical about it. I think from that point of view, an awful lot of the clubs that you want to see in these competitions from a commercial point of view are in. So that is ultimately, you know, let's not be naive. This is why they make these decisions. They are commercial decisions that these make. They're not sporting decisions, not really. And so I think that UEFA will be quite happy with the way that it's gone out. Bayern Munich not finishing in the top 8 is, I would suggest, something of a surprise. Obviously, PSG and City not qualifying for the top 8 is also a surprise. And Juventus, of course, not getting into the top 8. So that's been quite fun. I mean, you know, any competition where Lille are one of the top sides, you know, suggests that, you know, it's got that capacity for sporting surprise. And, you know, Villa, who have not been in the Champions League in yonks. So, I mean, that's nice to see. I would suggest that they'll keep it as it is. There is a novelty factor to this. And over time, what will happen, I think, is that coaches and squad planners will look at it and go, well, look, this is actually how it's going to be. And then we'll be able to plan accordingly. And so you might actually find that actually, you know, after a few years, it does actually become as kind of predictable as the previous incarnation was. But there will always be clubs that have poor seasons, good clubs that otherwise have played very well, but have poor seasons to keep the interest going. So I declare it a success, but with the proviso that it's still, I would suggest to you, an unsatisfactory way to have a cup competition. The best cup competition format is knockout, straight knockout.
Well, we have a big knockout now. And in that first round of that knockout, we've got City versus Real, which is obviously, it's thrown up a plum tie.
Yes, of course. I forgot Real, yeah.
So one of those teams isn't going to be in the last 16. So although people may say rightly that, oh, well, not a lot of the big names have gone out, at least one of them's going to go out in this playoff round, aren't they?
That will be, I have no idea how that one is going to go. I've got a feeling that Real Madrid will, so I do have an idea. I have a feeling that that's bad news for City because Real Madrid in the Champions League are, generally speaking, this is their moment, isn't it? They tend to shine in this latter stages of the competition. They find something extra. That said, you know, I feel they're a team and a club that's in a bit of transition. It looked like a club that's waiting for a new coach, with respect and love to Don Carlo. And I wonder whether or not that shows. So it could be that this year is a bridge too far for them, because there have been in matches where you've looked at them and gone, how on earth have you won this game? They tend to be ruthless and they capitalize where opposition teams who are clearly playing better than them just don't punish them, don't score the goals that they need to win the games. And I think you could look at City last season when they played them. And certainly to an extent, Dortmund in the final, although I would argue that Dortmund only appeared to be the better side in that game, but actually weren't.
What do you think of the draw against Sporting then?
Dortmund should be very pleased to have got Sporting. I think Dortmund's record, generally speaking, I think is favourable in against Portuguese teams. And obviously Dortmund have got some transitions themselves to go through, so it's not easy. But I think Dortmund will be confident that they can actually get through there. Dortmund's biggest challenge, of course, is getting back into the Champions League next season.
Yeah, the most disappointing tie, I think, in this playoff round is Brest getting PSG.
Yeah, that's bullshit.
Yeah,
that's a Ligue 1 fixture. No one's going to watch that because no one watches Ligue 1. So, yeah, sorry,
yeah.
Ligue 1.
Yeah.
Not even the French watch Ligue 1.
Well, this weekend, it's the fourth round of the FA Cup, and we're going to be doing something in the box set that we haven't done for a long time. Actually, the last time we did this was back in 2018, I think, for the Nations League. And that is all of the games in the box set this week and are going to be FA Cup games. That's because, for me, the FA Cup is something interesting to look at. I've got no skin in the game now because Arsenal are out. In fact, out of the three of us, it's only Palace that are left in there. So, Jan, which game have you picked out to preview for the box set?
I've got Birmingham against the Dirty Mags.
Ooh. Now, Birmingham are doing pretty well at the moment. So, do you think they've got a chance at home against the Mags?
Well, absolutely. I mean, Birmingham are top of League One. They're going great guns there. So, it's good to see a big club like that doing well. Hopefully, they're going to bounce back. Newcastle have lost two of their last three. And I don't think the wheels are coming off Newcastle. Eddie Howe's a fine coach and he's got a great team there. But it's a bit of a banana skin for them, isn't it? You wouldn't want to be going to a team like Birmingham in the form that they're in the form that the Mags are in. So, that's definitely one to keep an eye on, I think.
And Terry, you're going to be covering two games for us this weekend. You've got United versus Leicester, Ruud van Nistelrooy's return to Old Trafford. And you've also got Plymouth versus Liverpool. Well, Plymouth getting hammered at home to Liverpool. Well, is that how it's going to go? What do you think?
It probably is how it's going to go. I mean, Plymouth obviously had a very, very positive start to the season. And it's all gone horribly wrong. And they're sitting rock bottom of the table. And of course, Wayne Rooney, who is beloved Wayne Rooney, but not, as it turns out, to be a particularly good coach. He was fired. The new guy is Miron Muslic. I apologize for not pronouncing the name. He's Austrian, and he is two games unbeaten now. I mean, in the championship, they're still rock bottom of the championship, and you would feel that there is only one winner in that one. But it is at home park, and I'm assuming that Arne Slot will rotate. So there is always the possibility for an upset, but it would be a remote one. But I'm going to try and drum up a bit more excitement than that. Or I might just say, Liverpool will win. Send.
No, he will write more than that. I've got Villa versus Tottenham to mull over and Blackburn versus Wolves. And if you want to see all of the previews that we write this weekend, all of our previews of the FA Cup fourth round, then get along to sofpodcast.com and click on the link for the weekend box set and subscribe. Subscribe to our Substack. And there's only one a week. You're not going to be spammed with it with loads and loads and loads of content because we're too lazy to produce lots and lots of content. But we do a newsletter every Friday and it's got the seven games we think you should be watching from Friday to Sunday. But that is all we have time for this week. So from me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton and from Terry Llewellyn, it's goodbye.
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 Get in touch with us on Blue Sky or Instagram, where we are at Sound of Football.
or go to sofpodcast.com. Like us, share us, rate us and review us. Do it now!
You're going to watch Sunderland Middlesbrough?
Is that tonight, is it?
That
I was
is.
Thinking of actually watching Chelsea West Ham.
Ah, okay.
But actually, you know what? No, I think I'll watch Sunderland versus Middlesbrough. You know, a massive local derby like that. Why would I want to miss
massive,
that out?
Massive local derby.
I thought he was remarkably calm, actually, given how much is at stake. Massive game, Yanis. I know he likes to play down this rivalry, but I mean, I know you can see the blood boils whenever you talk about it.
It was all he was talking about on Saturday, wasn't it?
He wouldn't shut up about it.
Yeah. I was saying, we're in the last 16 of the FA Vars, and all you can go on about is Sunderland's massive game on Monday. Biggest game of the season.
I know. I mean, I appreciate it's obviously a massive game for them, but really, you know, he needs to try and reacquire some focus, you know.
Yeah.
He's going to be a nightmare if they lose.
Of course he is.
Stay away from Whiteleaf.
Except on March the 1st. Then come to Whiteleaf.
Are we still recording?
Probably.